Good afternoon, and welcome to NAESP's Lead for Literacy webinar series. At this time, I'd like to introduce NAESP's Associate Executive Director for Professional Learning, Dr. Gracie Branch.
Thank you, Honor, and welcome, everyone. Today is International Literacy Day, and what better way to celebrate than with our partners at the Lead for Literacy Center at the University of Oregon. And so I'd like to introduce our distinguished panel today. We have Jess Searles. Jess is a technical assistance coach for the Lead for Literacy Center at the Center on Teaching and Learning at the University of Oregon. She has over 13 years of experience in delivering classroom instruction, collaborating with educators and leadership to support program implementation, as well as designing professional development on literacy and educational practices. Dr. Lana Santoro is co-principal investigator of the Lead for Literacy Center. She teaches pre- and in-service teachers and instructional leaders and consults with state, local, and private agencies on projects related to multi-tiered systems of support, school-wide reading, and the implementation of evidence-based practices. And last but not least, we have our facilitator, Dr. Lauren Artsy, who's the technical assistance coach for the Lead for Literacy Center and senior researcher at American Institutes for Research. She brings 16 years of experience in education, 5 as an ESL teacher, and 11 years of experience in education research and as a technical assistance and professional development provider. So welcome, everyone. We're so looking forward to your presentation today.
Thank you so much. And thank you to NAESP for having the Lead for Literacy Center. I'm Lauren Artsy, and I will be facilitating the session. And so we will be, as the session is moving forward, we will be posting some resources in the chat and definitely encourage anyone who has questions or comments or discussion points to post them in the chat, and we will be stopping every so often to discuss the things that are coming through the chat. And as was mentioned at the beginning, all the materials for today's session can be found at www.naesp.org/webinars. And we will also be posting a PDF that will guide some of our breakout discussions as the session moves forward. So at this time, I will turn it over to our presenters from the Lead for Literacy Center.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much, Lauren, and thank you so much for the introduction, Gracie. We are excited to partner with you today and bring you our webinar focused on building effective school-wide supports for leaders. One of the things we are particularly excited about is the recognition of International Literacy Day, and that our webinar has been scheduled to honor and recognize this occasion. I think for all of us who work in literacy, this is a particularly important thing to recognize. Internationally, there are currently 773 million adults who have not achieved basic literacy skills. I also think about the data from the United States as well. For example, our National Assessment of Educational Progress has shown that at least 64% of our fourth grade students have not achieved proficiency in reading, and 31% are below basic with reading skills. Those findings are also particularly more important to recognize for students with disabilities. For example, there are 88% of fourth graders with disabilities who have not achieved reading proficiency. So we come to share our work with you and recognize this important occasion, both internationally as well as here in the U.S. So keeping that in mind, my My role is to help kick off our session. I'm going to be spending some time introducing what our center is about, what is the Lead for Literacy Center, and framing the work that we do within a school-wide reading context. I will also introduce what we call our Lead for Literacy Framework. And in that framework, we have five different elements that we'll be talking with you about throughout our webinar. I will present the first two, and then I'll present then I'll pass things over to Jess Searles, who will carry the presentation forward with the remaining elements, and she'll conclude with some resources that we want to share with you. So all in all, just so you know how we'll pace things, my introductory content is just to frame things, so I'm hoping we'll stick within the first 30 approximately minutes, maybe a little longer than that if we have a breakout with you, and then we'll move into additional content. So important in terms of setting things up as we move forward, I want you to be aware that we are part of a series of webinars that NAESP is helping sponsor with our center. So we are today talking about our kickoff webinar, which is an overview of our Lead for Literacy framework focused on building effective school-wide multi-tiered systems of support. In November, we'll have a session that focuses on assessment, which is particularly timely, given the work that we're doing as we head back to school traditionally and virtually. In January, we have a session focused on early literacy. So if you're an early childhood educator or focused on that early intervention, that's an interesting session to attend, where we're actually partnering with two different projects that have received funding from the Institute of Education Sciences, and both those projects will share their work and provide resources from a leadership perspective. Then in the spring and April, we're going to be looking more at instruction in depth from both a code-based and meaning-based perspective. And then finally in June, we'll conclude with how to support through professional development. So do know that this series is being sponsored by NAESP. We would love you to attend every session with us, but it's not required. And I know NAESP is recording these sessions, and so they will provide information about that as we when we conclude today. So know about our series. We're excited to present that. We are part of a larger team who supports this work. Jess, Lauren, and I get the pleasure of sharing content with you today, but we have a larger team who supports our work. And I want to recognize specifically our director, Hank Thing, and our deputy director, Allison Gandhi. We also have partners with NAESP is a leading partner in our work, along with WETA, who helps us develop online module content, and the Meadows Center, who helps us evaluate our work. Importantly, too, is that we are a cross-center collaboration. So our center, it touches staff from both the Center on Teaching and Learning with the University of Oregon, where Jess and I are affiliated. We also partner equally with the American Institutes for Research, where Lauren's affiliated. So we're a cross-institute partnership. And we receive our funding from the Office of Special Education Programs. They support our work, and our project officer, David Emmenheim, leads that effort. A few items of business as we get started. First, if you could keep yourselves on mute with your webcams off during the majority of our presentation, that's much appreciated. We will, however, attempt some breakout groups and sessions with you. And during those times, we would love you to turn your camera on and your mic on in those smaller group settings so you could participate in some small group activities. Throughout, please, any questions, type them into the chat box. Lauren and Jess, while I'm presenting, will be looking to see if they can address any of those questions as we move forward. And Jess and I both will be taking pause and process breaks throughout our session to check in with Lauren to see if there are any other questions that we can help address. She'll also let us know the themes and some of the content that questions have represented, and we can process that content. So do respond in chat if you have any inquiries. So I would love to try out some interactive features on Zoom. Many of you might be, in Zoom overload at this point. But if you're new to Zoom, there is an annotation feature that helps us interact together as we move through content. The annotation feature can be found, I think it's most often on the top of your screen. If you hover over an area related to screen sharing, you'll see a pop-up window very similar to the one that's shown on the PowerPoint here on my screen. If you then select the annotate feature, you are able to determine how you might interact on our screen, on our slides as we present. One way to annotate is to insert a text box and type in responses. Another way to annotate is to select a stamp feature, and that stamp feature is essentially a little icon that if you click in a certain area on the screen, a heart, a star, a check mark will appear, so that's one way to indicate a response. Lauren will be helping us through facilitation clear our responses going forward, but you can certainly erase your responses and clear them yourselves if you'd like, but she's going to really help us monitor it. Just want you to know that there'll be points where we might ask you to respond with a text annotation or a stamp annotation. And yeah, any questions at all? Lauren's going to be ready to help field some tech questions if you have trouble locating or annotating. If at all you have trouble, you can also enter your response in the chat box, and Lauren will be reading responses there. So if you can't get your annotate feature to work, no problem. Just respond in chat and we'll be able to catch your response that way too. So I would love to know where you're from. Let's try the annotation feature together. So scroll on the top of, I think on my screen it's the top. I can select annotate, the stamp feature. And once I select the stamp feature, I can then click over Virginia, which is where I'm from and I'm currently living, and put my little arrow on the map. You're welcome to do that right now. Just experiment with it. See if you can get your annotation feature to work and indicate where you are. I know we have an international audience, which I'm very excited about. So for those of you who are international participants, please tell us where you're from in the chat box. And I'll pause while we're getting some responses. And I'm happy for Iowa and Oklahoma to be represented. Texas is fabulous, and Georgia, Maryland, Virginia. I have someone else out there from Virginia, which I'm selfishly excited about. So it's wonderful to see. And Oregon, so we definitely have some West Coast represented today too. So certainly across time zones. And Michigan came up in the chat. And Lauren, I'll pause, check in. Are there any international responses in chat so we get a sense of our audience here? I think you're on mute, Lauren.
I don't see any yet, but we'll keep everybody posted.
Okay, wonderful. Well, thank you, everybody, for trying that. I'm going to advance to the next slide. We will try again with the annotation. And please indicate, I just also getting a sense of who you are and your roles, as well as practicing the annotate feature. Please stamp in the box that represents your roles. So we have district leadership, school principals, assistant principals, if you're a facilitator, teacher, paraprofessional, specialist, consultant, someone representing a local educational agency. Great. So several consultants I see, and our administrators, our principals and assistant principals here too. Wonderful. Yeah, well, welcome to you all. And thank you for your responses. It helps us as presenters know our audience, and also to know where you're from too. So thank you for your response. It also gives us an opportunity to practice that annotate feature so we can use it later on in our session. So much appreciated. I'm going to move forward. And thank Lauren for helping clear the responses. So here's our agenda. Let's get down to business. I want to tell you a little bit about what the Lead for Literacy Center is, who we are, and what we do. Then I want to present a framework that is designed to help school leaders be effective in terms of literacy work and the literacy support you provide to your staff. That framework has five elements, and we'll be talking about each of those five. Two in a summary level, three with more depth. We'll conclude by giving you some available resources, both web-based, also free and accessible. So Jess will walk you through those at the end, and throughout we will respond to questions and answers. If for some reason your question is not addressed, our contact information is also provided at the conclusion of this presentation, and you can certainly reach out to us. We're more than happy to follow up if you have any unanswered questions. So for today, I want to make sure we cover these three main outcomes. To share this framework with you and highlight the five elements of our Lead for Literacy framework and talk to you about how those fit in terms of supporting school-wide implementation of a multi-tiered system of support. We definitely want to ensure that you're accessing web-based tools and resources and engage in application activities throughout. So let's describe the Lead for Literacy Center, just so you know who we are. And as you move forward, and if you participate in other webinars with us in our series, you'll know what the Lead for Literacy Center is about. Our primary purpose is to provide technical assistance to school leaders. We do that to focus on instructional content and the development of leadership skills for the purpose of improving teacher outcomes and student outcomes. So improving teacher implementation of evidence-based practices and, as a result, impacting student learning. As a center, we have layers of target in terms of how we support literacy and implementation. We work with local education agencies and school leaders to support those teachers. When we look at our implementation, we also then in turn are working with teachers to support students in their capacity to implement evidence-based practices, and then students, of course. And for us, students are students who are at risk of or not attaining full literacy skills related to a potential literacy-related disability. So that's an important focus in our work. We also partner with regional TA centers and thinking about those regional partners as levers of change to help sustain the implementation work that we do. What do we focus on specifically? You heard me mention evidence-based practices, and that's really key, very important. We take an evidence-based perspective of supporting literacy. So evidence-based is what the science or the science of reading is telling us is effective in terms of working with students. Evidence-based meaning the research, we draw our work on the research conducted with teachers and students in terms of what are truly effective outcomes, what works. So high quality research, meaning research conducted with randomized controlled trials, for example. So we are looking at that evidence base, what we know from science, from research that works and is effective. We are drawing that evidence-based perspective to focus on literacy skills and concepts, as well as leadership skills. So our center, it focuses on three different areas of impact. One is we call it universal, and that's our work like our webinar today and our collaboration with NAESP, where we want to help disseminate our content in a broad space so that all can access that. We also work with state partners on targeted technical assistance, and our state partners engage with us in a little bit more focused way. We have a three-day in-person institute, and now within the context of COVID-19, we've changed that three-day in-person institute to a virtual series, training series. It's 6 sessions of 2.5 hours each. And the purpose is to dig a little deeper and help those state literacy partners and participants from that state increase knowledge and awareness of these evidence-based practices and start to implement with guidance. We also have an intensive technical assistance layer. Many of our sites that participate in targeted TA would then potentially partner with us in a more intensive way where we would coach and provide support related to the implementation of these practices. So our center is involved in these 3 different layers of implementation. Importantly, we're doing this in the context of multi-tiered systems of support. So we think, and you might recognize this triangle model related to level of intervention and support. So we're framing our work within the context of universal instruction or core reading instruction, instruction that meets the needs optimally of at least 80% or more of students. We also then think of providing the intervention levels of support, so a tier 2 or a targeted level of prevention where we are thinking about how we enhance and reinforce the core reading curriculum. And when we add that enhancement to our core, we're now hopefully addressing a level of students, 15% of students who may need that additional support. Also, if students require more intensive support and additional instruction, we think of that as a tier 3 level. So now we have students working in smaller groups on targeted skills, for example, that optimally in a healthy system would be about 3 to 5% of our students. We think of special education or working with students with disabilities, that occurring throughout the system or the multi-tiered systems of support. So one of the things we work with states and local education agencies to do is to consider where their resources are focused and also consider, are you optimally providing instruction to that core, to the majority of students? So within that context, sometimes we work with districts where their triangle is inverted or upside down. So more of your services and resources are being poured into this intervention and support for intensive learning with students, whereas we really want to try to reorient the triangle so that most of the support optimally is at your core level. So you can just distribute resources within this context. Here are 5 elements. So our 5 elements of the framework fit within the context of our multi-tiered system of support for reading. The 5 elements are based on research from school-wide reading implementation and from work in the context of multi-tiered systems of support. And when you look at that research, what emerges are these 5 main areas to consider. So when you're building your effective system, your effective school-wide reading system, you want to think about how you're anchoring that system to standard goals and priorities. 2nd is your administration, organization, and communication. The 3rd is, what is your assessment? What is that part of your system like? 4th is instruction and intervention. And 5th is the professional development component. So these are the 5. In our session today, we're going to overview these five. In subsequent webinars moving forward, we'll take a deeper dive into some of these elements. So notice this is just a different visualization for you within the context of a multi-tiered systems of support and reading. Standards, priority, and goals frame it, right? So what is our reading goal in terms of our system? Then how are we structuring that? How do we implement it from a systems perspective? That's your administration, organization, and communication. Then we have assessment and instruction working in concert to support the system. And as a leader, I think about, well, how does professional development support everything? So how do I provide professional development to support my staff in terms of assessment, in terms of instruction, in terms of focusing on standards, priorities, and goals? So right now, quickly, I'm going to ask you to help with your annotate feature. So we'll try that again. So hover over the top of your screen, I think, for many of you. Find the annotate feature and select the stamp. I want you to indicate which element of that framework would you like to learn more about. So which element of the framework stood out to you as an area of need or an area where you would like to learn more? And you can do that in the second column. And this is, again, helpful to us as we move forward, and also lets us give the emphasis to you in terms of what you're interested in, what your needs are.
And feel free, too, to put any answers in the chat if the annotate's not working, and we can add those answers in.
Okay, thank you. Yep. Well, you are... I think confirming your responses are confirming my sense of things too. So, yes, to have more support with instruction, intervention, assessment and PD makes so much sense. I think through leadership training, we know about goals and we know about systems implementation. So I'm glad to see 3, 4, and 5 highlighted. Your response also spurred me along because our second part of the presentation is on the instruction, intervention, assessment and PD. So I'm going to take the opportunity just to keep moving forward. And I appreciate your responses related to your interest in areas of need. So just a question. I want to define some things up front. So we're thinking about the context in this very similar way. I want to think about what school leaders need to know and do to support effective literacy. And here's where I define instructional leaders. This is where, as a center, we really feel that definition of instructional leaders comes through. It's leaders who are able to identify students, right? Figure out which students need to be successful leaders and what that content is like. So that's where you're understanding, you know, the aspects of instruction that support successful reading for students is one part. The other part of supporting teachers in the implementation. And then finally, it's evaluating, improving, and monitoring that a whole effective system of support, multi-tiered systems of support. So instructional leaders understanding what students need to know and to be able to do, number one. Number two, supporting the teachers in terms of implementation. And number three, supporting the system in this continuous ongoing way. And I just resting here very briefly to reinforce that it's always an ongoing process. We're always evaluating, prioritizing, planning, and implementing to support effective literacy practices. So there's always this emphasis on continuous improvement within the cycle of implementation, and our framework is centered in that. Relatedly, I just wanted to bring a voice from the field. So a principal from Franklin Pierce Elementary School talked about the importance of creating this culture for continuous improvement and indicated that the best advice that he could give an administrator would be to never be satisfied with your school or district's current level of performance. There's always room for improvement. An effective administrator continuously works with staff to reflect on successful implementation of MTSS and how to make that system even more efficient and effective for students. So instructional leaders have that emphasis on this continuous improvement and creating that culture in an ongoing way. This is where I want you to just pause with me for just a quick moment and take a look at our Lead for Literacy website. I'm going to model going over to the website on my screen. Lauren is going to help post that website in chat. You're welcome to come to the website with me, but don't lose your Zoom. Please know how you can change over to a different window, for example, and get yourself back to the Zoom and the presentation. So hopefully you're seeing my screen right now. We want to introduce you to our website because there are lots of resources here that support leaders. You'll see on the top band, the Lead for Literacy framework. I'm going to select that. And when I select that, I have a pop-up that shows the five elements of the framework: standards, priorities, and goals, administration, organization, communication, instruction, intervention, assessment, and professional development. If I select the first one, standards, priorities, and goals, I'm being taken to the standards, priorities, and goals framework. And you'll see that there's topics, subtopics within each of these elements. And if you explore or select any of those, you'll be directed to resources. So moving forward, you are most welcome to explore the website element by element as Jess and I present. So as I talk about standards, goals and priorities, and then administration, organization, and communication, you're welcome to explore the website and follow along. I just encourage you to bounce back over to our Zoom and pick up with us, particularly when we approach some breakout group activities. We'll want you on the Zoom side of things to participate. So you're welcome to follow along the website and check out those resources as we present. I'm moving back over to the PowerPoint now. And we'll just check in with Lauren to see if we've had any questions so far.
Thanks. We haven't had any yet, but as we get into it and start to describe some of the content of the framework, please feel free to post and we will connect about those.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you. And we'll continue to check in with questions. So yeah, we'll please submit them if you have anything. So let me just briefly orient you to the first two elements of the framework. The first is standards, priorities, and goals. So some of you might be exploring that on the website. But essentially, the standards, priorities, and goals is critical and upfront because that defines your mission and your focus. And for the purpose of our content, that is your literacy or reading focus. And I just want to give you an example that I found very powerful. In some of our own work, it relates to virtual learning, and it gives it a perfect example of what a centered goal or plan and how that goal or plan provides focus or mission to what you're doing. So, for example, there is a district in State College, Pennsylvania, who was really scrambling to figure out virtual distance learning. And this occurred in the point in time in March when we had the shutdown and they wanted to continue instruction and even continue over the summer because they knew how much time was missed by students because they didn't receive that direct reading instruction. So this particular district formed a mission. They formed a team. That team included district reps, some classroom teachers, some school leaders, interventionists. They created a website. That website gave information to parents and also included an access to recorded lessons so that parents could obtain recordings of those lessons, those reading lessons for students. They also created a multi-tier support plan to figure out how to provide Tier 1 and Tier 2 instruction virtually, and they specified it in writing. So they identified how they were going to address virtual reading groups, how they would record lessons, how they would deliver live lessons, what size of those groups was optimal. They also developed a plan for gathering data. So they had a very clear focus mission. So there's so much going on right now, but for the Easterly Parkway District in State College, Pennsylvania, they had a focus that brought it all together, and it was this virtual learning plan. They wrote to us and they said, our ECRI summer team, and ECRI is called Enhanced Core Reading Instruction. They said they wanted me to share some data with you about our progress. We have continued to provide instruction to students for about an hour a day for the past 6 weeks. And that was like over the summer. So they were providing instruction and continuing that continuity. And it is a woohoo. It's certainly an exciting piece and focus. So goals set. Goals set your purpose and your mission. Administration, organization, and communication is also key, but I want you to think about that piece today from a teaming perspective, and that a school principal or assistant principal doesn't have to do the heavy lifting alone. And that's something that we really work hard to do in our center, is to work with school teams. So we have a leadership team participate in our training series, for example, and that leadership responsibility is distributed across teams. And this is just a visual to show that representation. So we have in our MTSSR, multi-tiered systems of support reading, that we have an implementation team that might include a school psychologist, a principal, a grade level teacher rep from each grade, for example, focus on the overall implementation of MTSSR. We also have intersecting there, we have the teams that operate at grade level, like our professional learning communities. And through this teaming structure, we're able to support the implementation of a pretty complex model. And so when we think of administration and organization and communication, I want you to think at least a very small part of that is really how you're optimizing and leveraging your resources related to teaming. So I know you maybe have been poking around the website. I hope you have. I've got to just stop my slideshow here for a minute and bounce back to the website to show you another feature. I'm clicking here on resource repository. It's the third item over on the top banner of the website. If you haven't discovered this yet, this is very helpful, I think, in finding resources that you need. So, for example, let me just type in teens, since I've been talking about teaming. When I select teens, I now have four results of resources related to supporting teens. So the resource repository allows you to filter and search resources in our Lead for Literacy Center database. The other part of this too, just so you can see, is you can also sort by framework element. Let's say you do want more on instruction, and also by resource type. Let's say you want something on instruction like a webinar to embed in professional development in your building. I can now indicate that I might want to see if there's a webinar available. So anyway, I want you to know about this resource repository and how to direct your search more specifically to find things of need. So I've had a chance to talk about a couple of the elements very briefly. Standards, priorities, and goals help frame your mission. And we talked about administration, organization, and communication from a systems perspective. But today, really just planting the idea in mind of teaming and optimizing a teaming structure to support your work. So, Lauren, let me just check in again and see if anything else has come up.
There are no questions yet, but we're posting the links in the chat. And definitely, if anyone has questions, please post them, and we will continue to pause.
Great. Thank you. Thanks. Well, so here's a way to close out the intro content in our session. So what I'd like to do is get you all in breakout groups. So we have the capacity in Zoom to assign you, we're going to approach it randomly, into smaller groups. When we give the go ahead to our administrator support, they will assign us into breakouts. And we're going to pop into a breakout room virtually. When you get into your breakout room, please turn on your microphone and your camera so we can interact together in a small group. You'll also want to choose someone to lead your group to help facilitate, and also to timekeep to make sure that you are able to discuss what you can in the allotted time. That group leader can help provide a response to the larger group when we bounce back. I want you to focus on number 2, which is highlighted in red. I want you to talk more about which element of the framework will require the most attention and support this year and why. So in your small group, introduce yourself briefly and then talk about which element you're thinking about is going to require most support. So I might say instruction and intervention because of how we are now translating a lot of our instruction virtually, and that requires a new lens and additional layers of support that haven't been in place. That would be my way to discuss it, and we go to the next person in our group. So remember, there are five elements in the framework: goals, administration. Third is instruction and intervention. Fourth is assessment. And fifth is professional development. So I'm going to keep this one short because I want Jess to have time. So let's try to do it in 7 minutes. We'll try to do it in 7 minutes and get back over to Jess to continue on. So try, so Honor, you're welcome to get us into breakout groups now. Total of 7 minutes, and we'll try to follow this process.
And the PDF for the breakout session was posted in the chat. So you should just be able to click on the PDF link and be able to open the document.
Yeah, thank you so much, everybody, for giving that a try and getting in breakouts and connecting with this content. I think for the purpose of time, just to get your responses visually would be wonderful. So you're welcome to annotate. So for the section below, bottom half of the screen is another opportunity to annotate with a stamp feature. So if you use your stamp feature to highlight the element of the framework that you talked about requiring probably more support this year, please do so. You're also welcome to put a text comment in. So why you chose that? What are you focused on? But some stamping would be just a nice way to highlight things visually, highlight your conversations. To give that annotate a try. Yeah, thank you. We talked about assessments in my breakout as well. And we're saying how happy we are that NASP is hosting the assessment section next. Yeah, great. Thank you. It's nice to see assessment highlighted. Well, I hope that gave you a chance to talk a little bit. I want to give it over to Jess. We will have other opportunities for breakouts as we move forward. So Jess is going to pick it up and talk about the remaining three elements in the framework. Thanks, Jess.
Let me unmute myself. All right, here we go. So yeah, we talked about assessment and kind of tied that into some instruction pieces in the breakout that I was into. So it looks like that was kind of maybe across the board in breakout sessions, some of the interests of what you all were interested in learning more about and kind of an area of support for moving forward. So going through, looking at that instruction piece, and on the previous slide here, this is just a snapshot of what the website that Lena had previewed with you all before. If you go to that instruction and intervention section of the website, you'll find topic buttons on instructional time, instructional quality, instructional adjustments, tier 1, tier 2, and tier 3 instruction. So that'll get you to a landing page of resources and things for those specific topics if you are kind of exploring on the website as we go. So looking at instruction and thinking about the simple view of reading for instruction, and the simple view of reading discusses decoding and language comprehension together, equaling that reading comprehension piece. So the idea behind the simple view of reading by Goff and Turner is that decoding, you have to kind of build this decoding bucket or build decoding skills for students, which is really the ability to transform print into spoken language and then being able to read accurately and fluently as a student. So teaching students skills for decoding so they're able to then read text accurately. Then multiplying that by language comprehension, which is the ability to understand spoken language. And according to this formula, you have to have both of those pieces present for reading comprehension to occur. So if I'm only teaching decoding skills and students don't have any language comprehension skills, setting it up like a multiplication equation, decoding times nothing will give you nothing in the reading comprehension box. And then if I'm absent of decoding skills and not teaching students explicitly and systematically decoding techniques and skills, but I'm building their language comprehension, I have no decoding plus and times language comprehension will still give me no reading comprehension. So it takes skills in both of these areas to get to reading comprehension, and we have to build those both systematically alongside one another as we're teaching students how to read and really getting to that reading comprehension. So looking and kind of breaking these things down a little more at decoding, what are decoding skills? What is kind of filling that bucket of the simple view of reading? And those are things like print concepts, understanding the organization and basic features of print, phonological awareness, understanding sounds and language, phonics and word recognition, and then knowing and applying grade level phonics, word reading knowledge, which is their sight vocabulary, and that's not necessarily sight words, meaning like high frequency words. It really is how many sight words have students kind of stored in their word box. How many words can students recall with automaticity to help with reading fluently in text, which is that next little bubble. So that sight word knowledge feeds into that fluency, the accuracy, the rate, and the expression for students as they read. And then looking at the language comprehension bucket, or that language part of the equation, those are academic language skills. So we're building academic language skills alongside decoding skills. Even before students know how to read words on their own, we're still having to build those academic language skills. We're not going to wait for them to decode to build this language comprehension. They're both happening simultaneously in the classroom. So looking at academic language skills, inferential language skills, so inferring information that's not provided in text, literal comprehension skills, where students can really find the answers in the reference to text right in the text that they're reading. Narrative language skills, so looking at a series of events. In kindergarten, it may be something like identifying the characters and the setting and the beginning, middle, and end of a story. That would be an example of a narrative language skill. And then academic vocabulary, teaching students different areas of language and vocabulary to use across subject matters and across settings. And then background knowledge. So we know students come to us with different kind of sets of background knowledge, and really being aware of that and helping build background knowledge as we're teaching in our classrooms. So then looking at essential components of reading instruction. So what does reading instruction in a multi-tiered system of support, what does it consist of? And what elements do we know through research and through evidence need to be part of that reading instruction? So we can kind of break these, you may have heard them as the big five, and we can break these big five down into those decoding and that comprehension boxes again, like that simple view of reading. So things that would contribute to the decoding piece of the simple view of reading are things like phonemic awareness and alphabetic principle, connecting letters to letter sounds so students can read and write. And then accuracy and fluency. So all of those pieces of the big five of reading kind of fit in that decoding bucket of the simple view of reading. And then comprehension stems kind of this bottom part of this graphic. And that's things like vocabulary, learning language and how to use that language in learning tasks. And then comprehension. So actively and intentionally thinking and interacting with the text. So the interaction between the text and the reader and teaching students how to do that. So we'll look really quickly at a video, and this is really laying out some examples of teaching those five essential components across grades. So you'll see kindergarten example, you'll see first grade examples, you'll see some third grade examples, but really looking at what phonemic awareness looks like, what phonics looks like in instruction, how we can build comprehension and vocabulary in a lesson. So just know that this isn't going to be a consistent lesson. You're going to see different teachers and different grade levels as they're learning an element of those essential components of reading.
Okay, here we go. In.
When.
Am.
Ham.
W. Edge.
Wedge.
Tricky. Here we go. Crab.
Crab.
Okay, we're each going to get a turn. Angela. In.
When.
Josiah. Brig.
Brig.
Wonderful. That was strong. Give yourselves a strong clap. One, two, three.
Ready? We're going to practice saying sounds. When I point to the sound, say the sound in your head. When I tap on the sound, you will say the sound out loud. My turn. Sound. I. Sound. E. Your turn. Sound.
I.
Sound.
E.
Oh, wait a second. Sound.
E.
Sound.
I.
Sound.
I.
So my turn. Sound. I. Your turn. Sound.
I.
Yeah. Ready? Sound.
E.
So.
I.
So. next, let's try some individual turns. I will point next to the sound. I will call one student. Only that student says the sound out loud. Sound? Armanda?
Aye.
Beautiful. Sound? Eric?
Aye.
Sound? Goodbye. Sound? Okay.
Aye.
Nice job.
This in a jet. Kids.
Go ahead and take a moment. Read this book in a whisper voice to yourself so I can hear you read it. Want it not super in your head whisper. I want to hear it a little bit. So like, that way I can hear you read it. Nicely done. You know what I noticed? I saw a couple kids when they were reading, they stopped and they went back and they blended that word one more time just to make sure that they got that word right. And I think that's really awesome. Maya.
Can he fit in a jet kit?
Ooh, I like the way she read that. That one ended with a question mark and she said, can he fit in a jet kit? She read it like it was a question. Nice job. Turn the page.
Okay, we're on to our last word. Our last word is hardly. What's the word?
Hardly.
Emmanuel, what's the word?
Hardly.
Hardly. I have a picture for you. Hardly means not very much. I hardly do that. Or I hardly go to visit that place. In this picture, some light bulbs use a lot of energy. Some bulbs use hardly any energy. So hardly means just a little bit. Okay? So maybe there was something you used to do all the time when you were little. And now maybe you hardly do that thing anymore. Can you try to think about something you used to do a lot when you were in kindergarten, first grade, preschool? And now you hardly do it. You don't do it very much. Give me a thumbs up once you've had enough time to think about it. Jonathan, can you use a sentence for me? I hardly.
So I hardly ever use my roller skates anymore because I used to use them a lot because when I got them, I was super excited and I used them for 2 months straight. But when one moved, it got really complicated to use them anymore because we hardly had any wood floor.
I want to remind you of what our focus is today. Today we are really going to determine that story structure. Take just a minute to look at our different parts of story structure to remind us of the parts that we're going to be looking for today. Belinda, what is something you notice that's part of story structure that we're going to work on today? The beginning, the middle, and the end. And what do we call that, Cece, when it's the beginning, the middle, and the end?
A plot.
The plot of the story. Morales, what else are we going to be looking at? We're going to be looking at the plot. What else are we going to be looking at today? The characters. Who's in the story. And Chris, what else are we going to be working on?
The setting.
Setting. Ooh. What is setting, Abigail? Okay, yeah, where the story takes place. So we're going to focus on where the story takes place, or setting, the characters in our story, and we're going to look at just one of the chapters from Judy Moody and determine what happens at the beginning, the middle, and the end.
So as you think about those big five, those were clearly an in-person explanation and teaching and instruction of the big five. The next video will show you kind of how that can be done. How that can be done in a virtual setting. So the next one, you'll see just examples of remote learning and still teaching those essential components of reading. So we'll look at an example of how we can teach those letter sounds in a virtual setting. And this video is actually of remote reading instruction is from State College area, Easterly Parkway, which is the reference that Lena had earlier in the presentation about the team that was put together to deliver remote instruction. This is from that same group of folks there. So I'll go ahead and play this so you can see this as well for remote instruction.
Hey there. You're going to practice the sound spelling cards. When I tap the card, you'll say the name of the card, the sound, or spelling. Card, opener, sound, O. First spelling. Second spelling. Third spelling. Fourth spelling. You are going to practice saying sounds. When I point to a spelling, say the sound in your head. When I tap under the spelling, say the sound out loud. Sound. O. Sound. N. Sound. O. Sound. Now you're going to practice blending sounds to read words. Sound, sound, blend, sound, blend, word. You are going to practice reading words. When I point to a word, say the word in your head. When I slide my finger, read the word out loud. I want you to be listening to see if the word you said matches the word that I say. Word. Grow. Word. Toad. Word. Glows. Word. Nose. Word.
I'll pause it there so you can see how she set up her virtual environment for learning. She had her lessons, and she actually had a document camera set up at her home. So her home began to look like her classroom quite a bit, and set up her document camera, projected the document camera via Zoom, and recorded herself with herself in the screen so students could see her as she was delivering the instruction. And then at the end of each answer, she voiced over the answer as well and provided the answer so students could self-check. So if they didn't say grow after as she was sliding her finger to say that word, they would know that they had read that incorrectly. So State College kind of came up, this Easterly Parkway class and school came up with a system where they could still deliver virtual instruction, still using the materials they were using in person, just adapted it for that remote delivery to continue online instruction in a virtual remote environment since they were no longer going to school in March. So they actually, this whole team, divvied it up, had that shared vision. We're going to continue to provide highly explicit and systematic instruction the best that we can in a remote setting, divvied up the work, worked as a team, as Lena presented in the beginning part of the importance of that teaming effort, worked with their teams and really pulled together and made lessons for the remainder of the year, broke up the work by teachers and contributed all to a Google Drive shared housed folder so all teachers and all instructors could have reference and access to all of those lessons. So again, going back to that shared vision and that shared work and thinking creatively about how to still provide explicit and systematic instruction, still having students multiple opportunities to respond in that remote setting as well. So we're gonna go ahead and go from this video. And looking at instructional quality, again, in remote settings and in-person settings, making sure that quality is explicit and systematic in its delivery. So thinking about explicit and systematic instruction, for instruction to be explicit, it's stated clearly and in detail, leaving no room for confusion or doubt, having or showing and evolving a system, a method, or a plan, and then instruction, which is the act or the practice of the actual teaching. And in both of those videos, both in the in-person and in the virtual environment, there was explicit systematic instruction at play. And looking closely at that, what are those features and how do we know if it's explicit and systematic instruction? Which evidence says that is the effective way to teach reading, is students should be exposed to the big five areas of reading, that phonological awareness, phonics, that alphabetic principle piece, and fluency, accuracy with text, and then comprehension of vocabulary. And all of those features of instruction, all of those components could be and should be taught through explicit and systematic instruction. So kind of peeling the layers back to that, explicit instruction includes a lesson explanation or an objective. And in each of those videos, you could hear the teacher say, we're going to practice our vocabulary, we're going to practice our letter sounds. They were given a very quick kind of learning target. That didn't have to be long and complex, but students knew exactly what the task was at hand. And then models. So teachers modeled exactly what was going to be done in each of those, gave a sentence starter in the vocabulary one. And if you'll notice, he used not only the word she provided in her sentence starter, he also used complicated, which was another vocabulary word that they were using in their classroom. So really modeling how to do that and setting students up for success for those tasks. Students' participation and engagement. So lots of time for students to practice the tasks that they have that they're working on. Looking at appropriate lesson pacing, so moving not too fast and not too slow, not so fast that we're leaving students behind, but not so slow that we're also losing students or they're dropping out of the lesson that we're teaching. So watching students, watching their engagement, making sure that they are looped in and having it at a rhythmic pace to keep them looped into that is also really helpful with that lesson pacing. And then error corrections in each of those examples. If students were to make an error, the error was corrected quickly, very non-punitive. So it wasn't like, gosh, we just missed this the eighth time. It was not any punitive error correction. It was just a very quick, my turn. I'm going to model and show you how to do it correctly and then let you have another turn to practice. So really quick error correction, non-punitive, positive, and the lesson continues. And then checks for understanding. So looking in and checking in with a few students along the way to make sure that they're actually grasping the content that we're teaching. So any explicit instruction that's being done in the classroom to teach reading, as leaders, we should be looking for those elements of explicit instruction, looking for those explanations that are very clear and to the point, looking for that appropriate pacing, looking for student participation. How are we keeping students engaged? Those are all should be things as we're thinking in a virtual setting or in an in-person setting. Those elements should be there. So we're going to look at a video example of remote learning. And I want, as we're looking at that video example, thinking about the skills that are taught in the lesson, some student engagement, what is the student doing or what is the teacher doing to keep students engaged? How are students practicing the content? What do you notice about pacing and supports? And then error corrections. How are those errors being corrected? So as we're going into watching the video, it's going to be a resource from the University of Florida. But thinking about if you are a leader and you are watching in or you kind of dropped in on this virtual setting, what would be some feedback that you could provide to the teacher about some of those explicit and systematic instruction pieces that are being done well, the models, the examples, the student practice, and what would be some feedback from a leadership perspective that you would want to encourage to maybe strengthen? What are some areas of their growth that you could address if you would have watched a lesson like this given virtually? So this is from the University of Florida Literacy Institute there. And this is going to be just using one of their lessons. This resource is excellent. It has all kinds of instructional activities, tips for managing behavior, some templates that you can use or teachers can use to build out lessons to teach those five components of reading, those essential areas of reading. And they're already pre-done for you. Teachers just have to drop in the content that's relevant to what they're teaching. So a really, really great resource for virtual learning that University of Florida Literacy Institute is building out for teachers to be able to access. So here's the example of Elkhonen boxes. So thinking about what are teachers doing? How are they keeping students engaged? How are errors being corrected? And then when we go into a breakout group, our next breakout group is going to be you all talking through what are some feedback areas that you could provide to this particular teacher if this was a lesson. What were the look-fors that were there? And what do you wish you would have seen more in the example lesson?
Our sound game first, okay? And it goes like this. What's this a picture of, everybody?
Key.
Yeah, it's a key. Very good. Let's say the name of this picture together on the count of three. Ready? One, two, three.
Key.
Good. Let's try it one more time. Let's try to say it all together. What's the picture? One, two, three.
Key.
Very good. Much better. Now, I need you to hold your fist up like me. See how I have my fist up like this? Very good. Following directions the first time. Now we're going to say the word key, but we're going to say it one sound at a time. We're going to count the sounds in the word key. All right, ready? Watch me first. You can put your hand down for a second.
Put your hand down.
Good. Okay, now watch me, and then it's going to be your turn. Ready? E. And let's do it together this time. Ready? Hold up your fist. Let's say the sounds in key. E. Very good. How many sounds are in the word key? Two. Lily, will you count the sounds in key by yourself and show us? Go ahead. Very good. So let's check. I'm going to get rid of this box. How many boxes are there?
Two.
Two. That means there's two sounds in the word key. We were right. Ready? When I move this little circle into the box, you're going to say the sound. And you're going to say the sounds in key. And you can use your fingers again if you want. Okay? Ready?
E.
Very good. Let's do it one more time while I move them out. What's the first sound in key?
E.
Very good. You got it. Okay, so there were two sounds in key. Let's try another one. What's this, everybody?
Pig.
A pig. Yeah, your fist up. We're going to count the sounds in the word pig. I'm going to say it really slowly, one sound at a time. Ready? One, two, three, go.
Pig.
Pig. Good, let's try it again. Ready, pig. Let's count the sounds. One, two, three, go. Pig. How many sounds in pig?
Three.
Let's check. Were we right? All right, this time we're gonna say the sounds while I move the circles. Okay, what's the first sound in pig? Next sound?
E.
Can you scrunch up your nose like me? E. E. Good. What's the last sound in pig?
Yeah.
Very good. Let's say the sounds in pig one more time while I move them out. Ready?
Oh.
E. E. Very good. Three sounds in pig. Let's do another one.
All right, so the next one we're going to go to, we're going to head to our breakout rooms. So as you get to your breakout room, and we'll spend about 6 minutes in breakouts, thinking about what skill did you see taught, what was the student engagement for that, how could there, what was the pacing support like, and how could there have been adaptations to that if needed, and then error corrections. Did you see any error corrections in that, or how could errors be corrected? So thinking from a leadership standpoint, how could you move in some of these examples into teaching, and then how would you provide a teacher like this feedback in a virtual setting or in-person setting. So thinking about in your breakout groups, the look for is the skills taught, student engagement, pacing support, and error corrections, and then how could you support staff in the use of those practices? We'll head to breakouts when you're ready, Honor.
So I think we're going to keep it as a whole group.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Great.
Yeah, so I think if Jess, you're okay with it, if you're able to participate in our discussion, you're welcome to turn your webcam on and our mic, and we'll just do a whole group debrief.
Great. And while everyone's turning their camera on, I'll just highlight that there's some links that are being put in the chat. It's also part of one of the documents that you can download with this web event at NAESP. And there's a couple of additional links that we've also added. For instance, there's an online version of the Algonquin boxes and letter magnets and things like that. So we have some of those. And I should say that we seek to disseminate and distribute. We're not endorsing any resource or material, but definitely want to highlight, you know, when there's resources out there for dissemination and information purposes.
All right, we'll move on to looking at small group reading resources. So looking at instruction at a distance. This is, we're not going to spend time looking at this one, but small group reading instruction at a distance. This is put together by Nell Duke at the University of Michigan. And it is a great example of how to use Zoom in a virtual setting to deliver instruction. And she gives kind of some mock examples of some students that she's using, instructors to use some of those features of Zoom to deliver instruction. And another resource is National Center on Improving Literacy. They've put together briefs for remote literacy learning from a family perspective and for teachers. That is also in the, part of a toolkit for remote learning for resources that you can use as well. Then thinking about distance learning for COVID-19, thinking about online education representing a fundamental change in the relationship that students, teachers, parents, and the community have with their educational institutions, with one another, and optimally involving a deep investment of professional learning to develop excellent online instructors. So again, thinking about that professional learning as we make these huge shifts, potentially in a virtual setting as opposed to in person. So then looking at assessments, this framework also identifies assessments and the components of assessment and how it relates to instruction. So this is how the landing page will look in the website if you're following along on the website to look at assessments. And looking at assessments and what it means. So assessment and instruction are both important components of an effective school-wide literacy program or system. And looking at tying assessment to instruction to serve both educators and students. So assessments are really more for educators. They provide us with a really quick snapshot of what students are learning and where they are in the learning process of specific skills. And then also looking at assessment not as a method of teaching. We're not really teaching as we're giving an assessment. We're actually gleaning knowledge that we can use to steer our instruction. And that it's the instruction that's really for the students. So we as educators are using our assessments to inform the instruction to support the students in our classrooms and in our school buildings. So thinking about that relationship between assessment and instruction, we're seeking most rigorous and relevant information from an assessment system possible, and also remembering that each minute a child spends on assessment is a minute away from instruction. So really choosing our assessments wisely and using that time really to pinpoint targeted information that we're trying to glean. And we must be wise and effective and efficient in our assessment implementation. So thinking through, there's no sense in collecting data if we're not actually going to use it. Because if we're collecting data and not going to use it, then we're wasting time for instruction that we could be using to spend that on that instructional piece for students. So looking at a comprehensive assessment system, thinking about multiple data sources that make up our assessment system in a school building and really getting at how those, how instruction is playing out in our building and how those assessments and instruction are interwoven within our system. So looking at the first assessment type is screening. So making sure that we have a screening process in place for all students. We're identifying risks for poor learning outcomes. And then an important question we could ask is the student sufficiently different from their peers in that screening process? And looking at progress monitoring students' response to instruction and addressing that instruction as needed throughout that progress monitoring system. So a question for that is the student making adequate progress in intervention? And if not, how are we going to adapt our instruction to help provide support for students so they can begin making adequate progress? And then individual diagnostics identify skills, strengths, and weaknesses for students. And it does say a question for that one is, does the student need or are they meeting individual goals? So are we meeting the needs that they have? And then class-wide diagnostics, identifying skill strengths and weaknesses, but it's a broader level. Instead of at an individual level, we're doing that for a group of students. So does the student need as a group, are they meeting their goals? So looking for questions for assessment implementation, a couple of things to think about before we look at those questions. Systems of assessment are best selected and implemented with a team-oriented approach. Going back to content earlier where Lena was talking about the team does this as well. They assess and look at the teaming structure and the assessment system of a school building as a team. So really working with that team-oriented approach when we're selecting assessments and implementing that assessment system. And then effective leaders lead by doing. So they provide team support through active leadership to promote healthy changes that are happening with assessment and instruction practices in our building. As part of that work, it's important that we're selecting reliable and valid assessments to use as our school-wide system of support. And then looking at questions on this slide, helping guide that work for that implementation process. So is there a team-based decision-making process in your building for things like assessment selection and protocols for administration and interpretation? Are we reporting those results out to staff and parents, and how is that being done across the team to share that workload? Is there a school-wide understanding of the purpose of those assessments and what we're doing with that assessment data? Are we using those multiple types intertwined together to make those informed instructional decisions? How often are we screening? How often are we progress monitoring? So really thinking through those things as a team. And then looking at assessment in a virtual context. So standard assessments can be administered in a virtual environment. However, thinking about the vendor of the assessment that you've chosen and really looking at the resources that they have provided to provide some guidance around a remote assessment. And then looking at comparing apples to apples. So if we're testing some in virtual and some in person, how do those play with and against one another? Are there some things that we need to take in consideration as we may be shifting how we're delivering this assessment, especially throughout this year, with some of that being in person and some of that being virtual? A resource to consider with that is the INSL considerations for virtual assessments. And this is put out by the National Center of on Intensive Intervention and runs through some considerations to think through as you're looking at assessing students in a virtual environment. So then this is an example as well of a video. We won't play it, but it is there for you if you would like to watch it, about how to conduct reading fluency screening in a virtual setting. So how can that be done and how can we collect that data and then use that data to inform our in-person or our virtual assessment or instruction, sorry. Thinking about remote assessment guidance, we do have a few resources listed out here, and they are on the document on the NAESP website as well. Specific vendors who have put together guidance around how to deliver their assessment structures remotely. And you may not be using one of these specific assessment systems, but there's lots of examples of letters to send home to families about communicating how assessment will be done. There's some English videos and some Spanish videos around assessments, some tips for screening in remote settings. So even if your school is not using one of these specific measures for assessment, it may be worth kind of perusing those sites to see about some of the guidance that others systems are putting in place to help with that remote assessing of students in the virtual setting. And this is just one pulling from the Dibbles 8th edition example of that. So you can see the example parent communication that Dibbles has put together to help guide schools as to how to have effective communication between families and schools regarding virtual assessing. And then just thinking about flexibility during COVID-19. So thinking about disruptions and typical routines, I'm sure some of you may have experienced some of those already, but looking at just as a literacy leader, still thinking about providing that clear communication with families and parents, leveraging the expertise from the assessment team in your building and how to use that data to still guide instruction, even if it's in a virtual setting. And then focusing on that variables that may come up between, like, some of you may have some students who are in person and receiving instruction and assessment. Some of your students may be in a virtual setting. And then others of you may have a hybrid system going where you have some students who are attending and are being assessed virtually and some students who are attending and being assessed in person. So just thinking about the variables that play into that assessment and instruction system. And then just making sure that you plan for flexibility. It's the name of the game in education, and especially these days, really looking at what are the best fit for the assessment rules and procedures for your local context in your own buildings. So the last component is the fifth component of the framework is professional development and job-embedded collaborative learning. So again, the topic buttons on the website for LEAD for Literacy would be high-quality professional development, job-embedded learning, coaching, professional learning collaboration, and then that professional development plan. So this is, again, just another voice from about data-based individualization and what the work that has to go on in schools is to support all of the instruction and intervention that's happening in buildings on a daily basis, is to get ready because it's hard work. Don't think there's anything in this process that doesn't challenge your intellect and professional knowledge. You need a level of commitment that even when it gets difficult, you will not sacrifice the time you've set aside of the direction you're given in terms of implementation of intervention. This has to be a priority. The administrator has to be able and willing to commit resources in order to be able to maintain fidelity to the plan. So again, just acknowledging that this is hard work. There's an added layer of hard work as we look at virtual and in-person and hybrid models, but really bringing that commitment to the table and that collaboration through a team as students are being that instruction is being delivered, and these assessments are helping guide that instruction. So looking at leaders as learners, student success is our first priority in anything that we do in a school setting. That leaders are visible in all student settings, and that means virtual too. So maybe dropping in on some Zoom calls or dropping in and seeing how students are being assessed in a virtual setting. Having a pulse on what's going on in the building, whether that's in person or whether it's virtual, it's still really important that our leaders are visible in the buildings, even if they've moved to a virtual or remote setting. And then there are participants in the learning process. So that we're all each a teacher, each a learner. So we're all learning along in the process, especially now. It's very new to us with the new virtual context. So really playing to the strengths in our building and helping each other grow as part of that process. And that we're working side by side with all staff members. And those are from the Qualities of Effective Principals document. So then looking at breakout session 3. We can talk about this as a group as well. So looking at application, how could the resources from this session help address some of the potential challenges you may be facing this year? What other information might need to be gathered? And then how can the school staff at your building work as a team to move the work forward this year? If you're here, you can turn your mic on. We can debrief as a group.
And I posted in the chat some of the links around the virtual assessment. There's also, those materials come with information about instruction and intervention intensification virtually. And so I can put those links in the chat as well.
Great. Thanks, Lauren.
Yeah, Jess, I know the assessment resources you shared, the sample that we can go back and watch, the video of assessment delivery in a virtual session, be tremendously helpful. And I really like what you said about how even the links to specific assessments, they're useful because they might provide samples of other things. So even if we don't use a particular assessment system listed in your resources, that they might have examples of letters to send to parents or an example of how we might set up a virtual assessment situation. So I think, yeah, thank you for saying that, that even though that they were specifically connected to a specific kind of assessment package, that there are other options and other things we can look for in them.
Great. And this, that goes back to like reinventing the wheel, right? Why reinvent the wheel and draft another parent letter if there's something that we could use already out there?
Yeah, exactly. And I think I'm just, you've done such a great job collecting the resources for this section of content and also that I hope people, when they view this, will look at the instruction ones too in great detail. The one you sent, shared from Florida is just fabulous. So I just want to concur that that should be on a must, look at list. It provides really great, already developed tools. Teachers just have to really input their specific instruction for that session, and they have everything ready.
Thanks, Lena. All right, any other thoughts before we move to the additional resources?
This is Lauren. I'll just also mention that I saw from the beginning of the session that instruction and assessment was definitely and professional development too were definitely very high interest areas. And so in this series, we will be having follow-up sessions where we kind of dive deeper into each one of those topics. So we'll be engaging with assessment next in November, as Lena was letting us know at the beginning. And then we'll also have a couple sessions centered on instruction and one on professional development.
I would just add really quickly that we have been working on some researcher information with the Learning Policy Institute and did a survey of principals, and we'll be releasing all of the results. But one thing that came through is that even though Java embedded professional learning is so highly regarded, it's effective, that there are high numbers of principals who are saying that they never get that. They never get that type of professional learning. So I think that's kind of interesting and something for us to pay attention to as well.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you, Gracie. I love that you're highlighting that. And it just, something I think we're certainly embedding within that last webinar in our series. So you'll have a couple great people from really great presenters from our team who are experts in that area, and they can showcase how to do that, not just what it is.
All right, so let's dive into a couple more available resources that we have at our fingertips. One you've already seen is the Lead for Literacy website that Lena introduced earlier in the session. So that is there for you to look through and find some resources and some information around each of the framework elements. And then coming soon, we actually have these in the work, are some Explore the Elements videos and viewing guides. So they'll walk through how to kind of implement some of these elements and these topic buttons on the website. So those are coming soon in the works, so be on the lookout for those. And then our resource repository, which Lena kind of perused through the Teams example, is another resource that's related to the L4L website. So again, you can look and search for what you're looking for, or by framework element or by resource type in that resource repository. And then the newsletter, sign up for social media and social media. So on our website, you can sign up for the newsletter. It doesn't bombard your inbox, so we don't get like 5 things a day based on the newsletter sign up, but you will get periodic updates about what's going on with the Lead for Literacy Center and new resources that have come out and are on our website or are available to the public. And then we also do have a couple of social media accounts, so you can follow us that way as well. And then another resource looking at this implementing evidence-based literacy instruction roadmap. So this is a resource from REL Southeast, and it walks through, from a leadership perspective, how we can begin to implement evidence-based literacy practices in our building through choosing evidence-based practices, forming an implementation team, so going back to that importance of teaming, creating a logical model for actually rolling out that implementation of those literacy practices, a self-study of implementing effective literacy instructions and interventions, evidence-based instructional materials and strategies and how to select those, and then additional resources for assessments and selecting literacy assessments for your building and your system, implementing evidence-based practices and resources around that, and then how to evaluate the implementation of evidence-based practices in your building. And then another resource is these What Works Clearinghouse Practice Guides. So the IAS Practice Guides, the Institute of Educational Science Practice Guides, help, they roll out really practical implications of evidence-based teaching strategies and resources. And they are free to the public. This is a link for the practice guides. You'll see it in the chat box. We'll get you to all of the practice guides that are available for teaching. And it's a myriad of things. You could find some for reading, but there are also practice guides around mathematics, practice guides around English language learners, practice guides around writing and secondary education. So going to that link will get you to I think there's like 25 or 30 IES practice guides for various topics that you can explore. And then we have questions and answers. So if you have any questions that are lingering, there's also a link for the survey here. So if you've attended the session, go ahead and take a couple minutes to complete the survey. You can either click on the link for the survey that will be popping up in the chat box soon, or you can scan the QR code for that. And I'll pause here for any questions that anyone has. So go ahead and take a few moments to fill out that survey. I'm just going to go ahead and go to our last slide, so you'll have our contact information. If you do have any follow-up questions or you're looking for a resource and can't find it, feel free to contact either myself, Jess Searles, or Lena Centoro or Lauren Artsy for more information from the session.
I want to thank all of you for being with us today. I mean, the information that you shared was just great. And you provided so many resources for us. And I'm so glad that you took the time to go through your website. I'm always interested in what you all are doing there. And I know that it just is a constant evolvement of a repository for resources for teachers and principals. So really, really appreciate you sharing that. I think that it's with it being such a virtual world now, it was great to see some videos that had teachers working with students virtually. That was really informative, and I appreciate that you shared that kind of information with us today, and really look forward to the next session on assessment.
Yeah, thank you so much, Gracie. We appreciate it and love partnering and enjoyed sharing this information. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Lana and Jessica and Lauren. Really appreciate you partnering with us and the information that you shared today.